All right, some other things I wanted to talk about. It has been a... It's been...
What is happening? What literally just happened?
I was going in one direction. I'm like, no, I don't think I want to go there. Let me go somewhere else. All right. I want to ask you real quick, 1999, 25 years ago, I jotted down some albums, some releases that are now 25 years old and what they mean to you at this point in time. Creed, the Human Clay album. Any emotions about that record?
Not really. I mean, look, they were huge back then, and for reasons, I get why they had a resurgency. I'm not sure if you realize this or not, that song Higher has come back, and I think it had to do with maybe a baseball team in Texas or the Cowboys. I'm not sure, but either way, they're touring again on that nostalgia, and I'm not sure if you've seen this or not or realize this, but it seems like every time you have a genre of music that was really big and then it fizzles out, it'll come back 20, 25 years later, and people just, you know, eat up the nostalgia. But I had that record when it came out. I liked it. And then, but it's not one that seemed like it stayed with me like some others from, you know, the late 80s and 90s. I mean, it's catchy, but it's, I don't spend a lot of time thinking about Creed, if you want to get my opinion.
I always liked the guitar work. I mean, I wouldn't say in every song, but by the time Human Clay was released, that's when I was working at CD Warehouse. And I thought the production on that record, it seemed superb compared to the first release.
I just read an article, the guitarist, I can't remember his name. If you say it, I'll remember it. But he said that he always wanted to do more of a rock metal sound. And, you know, his bandmates, you know, overruled him because, you know, they knew their sound could be commercially successful at that time. I mean, it was perfect timing. You know, new metal was, I guess it was kind of in the middle part of new metal, but there was like an opening for a band like Godsmack or Creed to come in and have real, you know, arena success and radio success.
Right.
So, but yeah, I mean, they just came out the exact right time. It's how any band, I don't know if it's true today because of the internet and, you know, YouTube and TikTok. Yeah. I feel like you're not going to have genres of music rise up. You're going to have little pockets of it, and you're going to have people that, like the stuff that, you know, Michael and Joe listens to, it's not on the radio. It'll never be on the radio. You won't see, you will only hear it if they show it to you. And I feel like that's true to a lot of music. Unless you're turning on the radio and you're hearing classic rock hits that you've heard a million times.
Agreed.
I don't know if I explained that very well, but.
No, you did. You
we're,
did.
We're just all siloed in our own little interest, and nothing, it's hard for something to break through to the masses. I think someone like Taylor Swift has obviously done it, and there's some other national, you know, hip-hop artists that have obviously done it, but when it comes to rock, it's almost impossible, and there's no way of going back.
Speaking of Taylor Swift, I don't want to talk much about this, but, you know,
she needs more exposure. Talk about
her. For the podcast here, I try to be on, I'm not on every platform, I'm not on TikTok, I'm not going to be on TikTok. I'm on Instagram, Facebook, X, and YouTube, and that's enough. And I'm probably less frequently posting on X because I'm really just starting to, I mean, life is enough of a headache and a swirl, and I just get on, you know, I'll just open X sometimes, and right out the gate, I mean, right out the gate, it's something negative or controversial or just garbage. So the first thing,
garbage.
I mean, it's something from
Twitter.
First post for you. I just opened the app. This is Terrence K. Williams. Taylor Swift is good friends with P. Diddy. They both joined forces with Hillary Clinton in 2016. They both endorsed Kamala as well. Taylor Swift should speak up since she cares so much about protecting women. And then there's a picture with Taylor and Diddy, and then you just keep scrolling, and then you see something else controversial, and then something, you know, somebody getting getting beat up, and other people are watching it, and then you see other just fun stuff.
You see like a horrific accident. It's like, I didn't want to see that. The thing with Twitter, so I don't really get on Facebook anymore,
like
but
this,
I do get
it's
on,
not fun.
I do get on Twitter, but it's almost for entertainment. I just did an experiment. I just pulled it up on my phone. And the For You, it's an account. I don't know who this is. It says 23andMe's board just resigned en masse with a bunch of those eyeball emojis. I don't know who this person is. I know who 23andMe is. It's, you know, one of those genealogy sites. And I'm sure there's some sort of conspiracy this guy's wanting to push a little bit. That, oh no, you know, they have your DNA. But yeah, it's just that. It's just all garbage. I look at it more for entertainment because I know it's complete, you know, BS. I saw something yesterday. I laughed out loud. It was a person, I guess they're being serious, but she was saying there's a time traveler and he's absolutely, you know, real and you have to believe it. And you see this guy's videos and he's like, I've time traveled back to 1989. I'm at this Taco Bell and the Taco Bell does look like it's from the 80s. And you're like, okay, well, I mean, that could obviously be fake because maybe they just have nostalgic furniture. And so he goes back in time to all these different years. And Daniel, he says, I'm in 1899, and he's in black and white. And I just started laughing out loud because this account is making it seem like it's serious, you know? And the comments are like, this is totally real. I'm like, you idiots. Like, he's in, like, it wasn't black and white back then.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just a complete joke. Now, I will ask you about this. I think I have an Instagram account because I have Facebook, but I've never really been on Instagram. What makes it different than Facebook or anything else? I honestly don't know.
Well, Instagram, at least, because I don't have a personal, I do, but I don't use it. I don't post anything. But for the podcast, you just like the pages that you, which for me, it's mostly sports or music. And there's not a whole lot more, there's not a lot of political junk.
Yeah.
It's, all right, so when you scroll through, I'm scrolling through Instagram right now, it's a lot more reels. Which can kind of run together sometimes.
Yeah.
But there's updates, you know, people will post updates and if it's musicians that I follow, it'll be where
it's all video based.
It's both. Yeah. Pictures and videos.
I've seen it when like Lowell will send something in our text chain and I'll be like, oh wait, this is Instagram, but I don't go beyond what was sent to me. Like, I don't know how to, like, you just keep scrolling up or.
Yeah. You can follow athletes that you like, public figures that you like, and then on down to your friends or other organizations. I don't think Instagram is quite, not nearly as toxic as X.
Oh, yeah.
It is kind of junky after a while. You'll be scrolling and you're like, okay, I probably could have spent 10 minutes doing something besides that, but. I don't really feel anything with Instagram. Like if I stay off of it for a few days that I'm going to miss something, like I don't have that feeling. I'm that need to catch everything has, I've dropped that as a priority.
Yeah. I mean, like with Facebook, I might log in once every couple of weeks just to, you know, see what's happening in the neighborhood. You know, there's always a helicopter flying over that I need to get more information on or a suspicious car that I'm, you know, very concerned about. As I get older, I don't feel the need to share my life with everybody. I feel like everybody that I'm in contact with is not that I don't want to be in contact with certain people. I just don't want to put my life out there for the whole world to see. But that's just me. And I don't fault anybody that's on there a lot and gets a lot of entertainment out of it and, you know, whatever else. But like when it comes to like Facebook Reels, I remember when that first came out, I was like, what is this? And then I was like, is this like TikTok? Because I'm not on TikTok. I'm obviously aware of it. But the more I would look at it, it felt so fleeting because you'd see something that might be really cool, but you can't ever get it back again. You know what I'm saying? Unless, yeah. I guess you save it or send it out. It seemed like you could just scroll for hours. And what have you really learned?
You can. And something that you laughed at for 3.5 seconds on January 23rd of this year, you'll have no memory of it. You have no idea what that was that you were looking at 6 months ago in that,
right?
In that scroll at 2:20 in the afternoon on that day. Like, it'll be no recollection of it. But you'll remember a God, I'm gonna sound like just like an old guy, but you're gonna remember a book that you read. You're gonna remember a even like stand-up comedy if you watched an hour-long special on Netflix, or you'll remember that. But all these fleeting jokes, like I don't want to put them down for people that get something out of them, and it maybe
No.
some people. I notice this too. Like I try not to pick on like Walmart or Dollar General. I talk about Dollar General sometimes on the podcast, but it's really not to demean people who work there. But you'll see people outside of some of these retail stores, and you can tell they're on a quick break. It might be lunch, it might be like a 15-minute break, and they're just getting in as much of that phone time as they can. Like there's like a break area, and there's nobody that's not like on their phone. And I think that to some degree, if you don't have a lot of time, it's just a quick escape. It's something that you got to manufacture a laugh from somewhere because you're going right back into your work environment. Everyone's kind of humdrum or just routine. If the work's monotonous or if it's not, or I could see where people are just not hanging around their best friend all the time and not getting on phone calls with people and getting a laugh, and that's just a quick burst. But
Yeah. Well, and I think another thing that I've noticed on social media is everybody's trying to get likes and engagement and all that kind of stuff. And you see all the fight videos and the Karen videos, which, I think I mentioned this last time we talked. The word Karen has definitely entered our lexicon and everybody uses it. But I feel like it's really unfair because there are women over a certain age that, have a right to have an opinion, and it's easy to just shut them down by saying you're being a Karen without listening to them. There are men and women that do cause scenes and are unreasonable at times, obviously. But anyways, but I noticed that you see all these like confrontation videos, and I started noticing something. Some of these are fake, and they're completely fake. They're made in a studio. I saw one the other day. Like, there was one on a plane, and I was like, his passenger's mad at the flight attendant. She's freaking out, and I'm like, this. I can hear everything. I don't hear the sound of plane engines. This plane just looked really kind of manufactured, like it's a set. And you start in all the comments, like this person is being ridiculous. And you keep scrolling down, you see one person like, this is obviously, or no, this is absolutely fake. I've seen this person. She's a TikTok actor. I saw one the other day, and there was a confrontation in a classroom. The teacher had taken down the American flag, and a dad was in the classroom, and he was, mad and put the flag back up and blah 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 blah. And the camera scrolls, and Dana, they are in a classroom that might be 8 feet wide. It is the funniest thing when you see like the size of this room can only fit about five people in it, Like it's clearly not real at all. And of course, all the comments are like, this is ridiculous. This teacher, what school district is this? They need to be fired. It's like, no, this is not real. This is completely fake just to get you outraged. So I really enjoy that.
Just disappoints me that this wasn't a part of. I'm glad that we got to be 20 something years old and not have all this in our diet.
Yeah,
There was
and
some
everything
lot
wasn't
of junk on
documented.
TV that we watched, I guess, but I
Yeah,
think.
and I just I think as I get older, that's kind of why I've kind of pushed away from social media. I don't want my life to be documented every second of the day. I see people online that have cameras inside their house, and that's good and well for them, and it provides security. But I wouldn't want to just be watching TV or watching Monday Night Football knowing that, I'm on indoor ring. Like, we have an outdoor ring camera because when the kids come up from school, I want to see that if I'm not here or if a package gets delivered. But like indoor cameras.
I got to ask you something because,
Yeah.
Wyatt and Vivian, it was really first Wyatt, now Vivian's caught on. He, I'm trying to steer him back to regular programming like Rubble and Crew. What are some of the other ones? Blaze and the Monster Machines, actual episodes. He is really getting stuck on YouTube Kids and some of these hour-long productions. Have you, I'm sure you have, seen the families, like the full families that put on these real color burst, playful activity episode,
You
endless episodes? They're all
have to
wearing
be
like,
referring. You have to be referring to Ryan's World.
There's like it spawns so many of them. Like the mom's wearing all orange, the dad's wearing all blue, the kids are in other color coordinated shoes and shorts and pants and shirts and stuff, and they're doing all this wacky stuff in these multi-million dollar homes. And have you been watching that stuff?
Okay, I have not, but I'm deeply aware of it. Allie is obsessed with Ryan's World, and then recently she's gotten just gone overboard with a lady named Rebecca Zamalo. Have you heard of her?
No, but I'm actually getting a little uneasy now that I've seen several of these, but I haven't heard of these that you're speaking of. So it just.
Yeah, oh, it's coming. Don't worry, it's coming. Ryan's World is it's fun for 4, 5, 6 year olds to get the whole family involved. It's all centered around this kid Ryan. Now, this kid Ryan's probably, I don't know, 8, 9, or 10. I'm not sure. And Michael actually asked me, no, it was Joe. He said, "Would you do this if you could be as rich as they are?" And I said, "Absolutely not. I don't care how many millions or how big of a house I get. I'm not putting myself in a bright green shirt and having these overblown emotions to everyday situations. I can't
So,
do it."
what I wanted to ask was, so I'll watch these productions where it's clearly a family and they've got the time and the resources to do this. And their kids are so young that they couldn't possibly object to it. I mean, they're like captive
Right.
actors. There's Nastia is one. I try not to pay attention to them. Honestly, I'll put it on and I'll be sitting there with Wyatt and I'll start reading, like, or that's the time that I try to read or check scores or something like that. But it's like a brother and a sister, and then on one of them, like, you can tell another addition to the family comes along. There's like another baby boy, and then that boy starts becoming 1 and 2 and maybe 3 years old, and he's acting with them too. And
Yes,
it's
yeah.
like, my God, can you let these children of yours have, which maybe they do. They don't spend all their time doing this, but if one of them, there's three kids, and one of them says, "Look, mom, dad, I understand what's happening here. I just don't want to do it. Do I have to? Do I have to act this? You're forcing me."
Well, you got to remember too, though, kids love to play. Make believe and get the camera out and do skits. I think that probably has something to do with it. But I was thinking, if you're a child actor and you're in the Screen Actors Guild, isn't there rules? Are there any rules for these YouTube kid actors on what they, how much time they can spend on this or not? I mean,
I'm
I don't
afraid
really
there's
know.
not.
As we were sitting here
I'm
talking, I just started
afraid
thinking,
you're stuck here.
yeah,
Back to the
no, but I
Future.
was thinking, you've seen. That's the second reference. You've seen these people on YouTube that they get their whole family involved and they get all these millions of followers, right? Okay, so we've seen all them. What about the people that like quit their jobs and tried but didn't make it? Because
Oh,
there's got
yeah.
to be thousands of people doing this, making skits, putting them on there, and it's just not getting traction. That's got to be a pretty disappointing feeling, knowing you threw everything away for YouTube skits.
Yeah, you're not gonna see me quit my day job. there's more to that story, but you gotta be realistic. I mean, people that they've convinced themselves or their friends, one group of friends has said, "Oh yeah, you and Susan be great at this. Y'all could make
You're so zany.
a you what?
You're so zany and you're so fun and funny and
Oh,
I don't know.
honey, we could do this. We could."
I'm
And then,
pulling this up as we're talking. This lady Rebecca that Allie, I mean, it is on every night. I'm looking at these little screenshots of all these videos, and everything is think of the most scared, surprised, sad emotion and amplify it times a million. That's the face she's making in all of these.
yeah.
And it'll be on in the background. And sometimes I'm like, Allie, please turn it down. And it's just the most over the top, loud personality. That you can, but I guess that's what you got to do. You can't just get up there and be calm and solve every problem the normal way. You've got to take to the nth degree. But yeah, that's just what the kids are into. And I guess you could just say no YouTube, but I don't know. I don't know, man. I don't have the answers.
I thought I was. Wyatt found some of these videos, and maybe Warren did first, on just wide open YouTube with no restrictions. And then I started seeing
Yeah.
stuff on there. I'm like, we need to get this over to the kids section. And so I created the kids profile, and I thought, okay, whew, like I can, this will all be clean and organized, and there's not gonna be any wacky stuff that's, I mean, there's still some weird stuff out there on YouTube Kids. Like,
Yeah.
it's just, I'm in for a long ride,
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, but I think every generation has had to deal with this in some form or fashion when it comes to raising kids and new entertainment that's out there and music and what your kids are exposed to. And you do everything you can, but they're going to see stuff they shouldn't. They're going to hear things they shouldn't. And it's just, being able to talk to them and have an open line of communication and say, hey, if you ever see something or want to talk about it, just come and we'll discuss it. We have a we give the kids a lot of freedom, and at the same time we have open lines of communication that, if like I said, if you need to talk about it, we will. But I think growing up we had that kind of upbringing where we were kind of left to our own devices. I know that there was certain music at a certain age that was off limits, and that of course is what we gravitated toward. But for the most part, we had a pretty easy. Our parents weren't helicopter parents, and I'm trying to do that with the kids so they can be independent one day as well. At the same time, making sure they're not just going crazy and going too far overboard with it.
I think you're doing a good
I don't
job.
even know what I'm talking about. Well, thank you.
Yeah, no, you're the best you can do as a parent, as a dad, is just have a presence. And
Yeah.
when they get older and they grow up and they think back on their childhood, they remember you being there. They don't have like this void where, well, mom was always there, but I don't know what my dad was doing. Like you take them places, you're at their events and their, and we could probably dedicate an entire episode to life at baseball practice for an 11-year-old. Actually,
Oh
let's
my
cover
God.
that for a second, because maybe this is relatable to other parents. What's it like when you get past the 6U and maybe the 8U, and you get to those that Thursday night practice for your 10-year-old, and there's not a lot for you to do, and there's not a lot of action all the time, and what?
Yeah, I mean, at the beginning, yeah, all the stands are full of parents, 6U, 7U, and as they get older, you start noticing less parents there. And then, I see some parents just drop their kids off and they'll go off running there and go home and then come back and pick them up. I just last year, I just started. See, we have these walking tracks at the ball fields, and I was like, man, I get an hour and a half. I don't want to sit in the car because I'm not going to sit there at practice. Because once you've seen hundreds of Little League practices, it's just, yeah, I can't sit and just watch. So I just started
You've seen
walking.
them all.
You have. And when they first start, it's fun to see them out there and it's exciting. And you try to be there to keep them in line if they're acting up in practice. But yeah, once you get to 10, 11, it's the coach's job to keep them in line. I'm not going to sit there and baby them. So yeah, I started walking around the track during that time. And this year I've been bringing Allie with me, and then she goes to the playground. And I just do laps and I see her, and she's old enough to know where we are. And so yeah, I just try to make good use of that time, that I don't want to just sit in the car and look at my phone. I don't want to go home and then turn right back around, 40 minutes later. So yeah, I just walk, put on a podcast or call a friend, call you. I don't know, yeah.
That's good. Well, how about anything that you're listening to right now that comes to mind that it may be a band that you've always liked, or what's something that we maybe didn't cover on the first episode that people would not suspect that this is right up Travis's,
Huh.
right in his wheelhouse?
I know it's been months since we've talked, but I've got some pretty big routines set in my life, and part of that is the stuff I listen to, the podcast I listen to. So there's really nothing. I mean, there's one podcast I listen to religiously, Pardon My Take. That's every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and then other ones as they pop up through the year. And there's really not been any new music. I feel like as I'm getting older, I'm just not, unless it's an established band that I've listened to for 20 years that comes out with an album every 4 years or so, it's really hard to get into new music.
I would certainly recommend a lot of music to choose from on this show. I think Secondhand Dream Car is worth a shot. You don't have to share an opinion either way, but How about some of these? I have this list of albums from 1999. For some reason,
oh,
I'm
yeah.
kind of stuck on that 25-year mark.
You just asked about Creed and just moved on.
Yeah. Christina Aguilera, What a Girl Wants. What does mm-hmm. this, at the time, what did it mean to you? And 25 years later, reflecting back, what does it mean to you now?
I'm still trying to understand what a girl wants or needs. Back then, I was so far removed. I mean, I was aware of her and Britney Spears and all the pop music that was coming out. But I was so far into, and I was a senior in high school, listening to, you know, rock and metal. That just did not move the needle at all for me. I thought, I mean, I saw it, I look at it the same way I did back then. It was just pop music, you know, it very catchy, but yeah, just not my thing. And thinking back 25 years later, I still have the same feeling about it. I don't really have any opinion on it.
How about, people forget this one, Garth Brooks, The Life of Chris Gaines. Remember when he did that?
Yeah, that was a head scratcher. Back then, even, you know, back then, I'd never been a Garth Brooks fan. I understand the appeal. I know he's a huge country sensation. Even back in the 80s and 90s when, you know, country really took off, that Nashville scene really took off, it just never really grabbed me. I always liked the stuff you turned me on to, like, you know, Waylon Jennings and all the outlaw country guys. So, yeah, it's about the weirdest album from 1999.
Oh,
I don't think I've ever even heard that album. I just remember, I can picture him with that alternative kind of black hair, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know what he was doing or what the plan was.
I don't even know if he still talks about it.
I mean, did they sit down there and say, like, you know, Garth, you know, what are we doing here, man? And he just said, no.
Obviously not the last guy in the room.
That's the problem with surrounding yourself by yes men. You know, you never get good advice. You got to be able to surround yourself with people that can be like, Garth, what on earth? This is going to follow you forever.
A couple other ones here.
I guess it didn't really matter that much because he's still pretty big, I guess, right?
Yeah, and I think every superstar is granted at least one, maybe even two kind of oddball releases. I mean, well, we could go down the list, but Hank III, whatever happened to this guy? He releases the album Rising
yeah.
Outlaw September 7th, 1999.
Yeah. Wow. Because then he was in Superjoint, but 3 years later, 2 years later.
Yeah, and I want to say that I saw him in 2005 at the Nick. Hank III
yeah, really
and the Damn Band.
Yeah, I mean, he brought a completely different sound. It was like punk country, if you can even call it that. I don't know, metal? I don't even know. It was unique. It was different, but he just never gained any real traction, I don't think. I remember he had an album around 2003 that came out. I can't remember the name of it, but I think John Crow told me about it. It was pretty good. It was just different. I mean, if you like country, you're not going to like it. But if you like, you know, rock and metal, it definitely was a pretty big swing. I haven't thought about Hank III in so long.
Looking at his Wikipedia page, he's released 11 studio albums now.
He's the kind of guy that seems like...
Rising Outlaw was the debut album.
Yeah, but he's the kind of guy that can tour forever, can, you know, eke out enough money to survive, but he's always going to be playing it like the Nick. He's never going to be playing anywhere big. And it's not anything against him. It's just that music is, you know, very focused on a certain audience.
Yeah.
I didn't think I'd be discussing Creed, Christina Aguilera, Garth Brooks / Chris Gaines, and Hank III. You could have given me a million guesses. I would have never put those four together.
Okay, finally, and there's some other albums from 99, but I specifically looked up September of 1999, and on mm-hmm. September 21st, pretty close to what is today, the 18th, when this comes out, it will be the 22nd. Typo Negative, World Coming Down.
Yeah, Typo Negative is a weird band for me because I, you know, love a lot of their songs, but it's the kind of band, I think Tool is like this for me too, where I really love, I'm talking top 10 favorite songs, but their albums as a whole, I just never got into.
Yeah. It's got Everyone I Love Is Dead. Everything Dies was a single.
That's a good, yeah, I remember that song.
Very uplifting here.
Yeah. They were a happy-go-lucky band.
They actually finished track number 13 is the Day Tripper Medley,
Ooh.
Beatles cover.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever gone through and really given their albums a proper listen. But again, I mean, their music to me is it's very downtrodden. It's very industrial.
Yeah.
It's a fun band to listen to in October, you know, when the season's changing and Halloween's coming up. But, you know, middle of the summer, sitting at the pool, it's just really hard to get Typo Negative on the playlist.
The black and green. Yeah, with ha
Was
Halloween
it Peter?
coming up, I always love queuing up some Typo Negative. Peter Steele was a very unique talent. People
He
look
was a
at,
tortured man.
yeah, he was. On the surface, people might look at a Typo Negative and just have one opinion, but I mean, Peter Steele had a wonderful sense of humor. You see that in some of the lyrics and any
Yeah.
interviews you may
Well,
have seen or.
and their sound was just so unique. There's never been anybody. And if you think back to all of your favorite bands, pretty much you see people online on these subreddits, you know, tell me a band that sounds like Mastodon. It's like nobody does. And if they do, they're not going to be as good. Tell me a band that sounds like Typo Negative. Nobody, like any band that can break through to that level that some of these bands do so because their sound is so unique, nobody's heard it before. And I think that's what made them good. But yeah, I mean, I was listening to a podcast last year, and they brought up the band Typo Negative, and these people are 45, 48, they're comedians, and they never even heard of them. I mean, they were in high school, college when Typo Negative was huge, and they'd never even heard of them. It's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. Which I'm
Well,
sure a lot of people haven't.
I've kind of gotten away from, there's not a lot that I listen to on a regular basis that is overtly dark. I'll do the shuffle sometimes. If I'm not listening to podcasts, I'll just shuffle my entire collection. And when it lands on, like, well, I'm not gonna name drop any more bands, but some stuff I'll let it play out. But I'm just, you just get to that place in your life where you think maybe a few more years I'll have a craving for it again.
I just as I get older, it's very rare that if I'm, you know, walking or, you know, doing chores around the house and I'm listening to music, it's just it's like strictly podcasts. You
Now,
know, I listen to
I will
go
say,
ahead.
like Mastodon, they kind of transcend that. So their sound is just so layered and it's just such a,
Yeah.
so much going
And
on
the
in their
more you
music that.
there is, and I've seen some videos, and it makes me listen to their songs a little bit differently. Their drummer has put out some videos on YouTube that, you know, breaks down what he's doing in certain songs. And there's one song, Blood and Thunder, which is one of their biggest hits. They end their sets with, and if you isolate the drums from everything else, there is so much going on that you cannot possibly hear on the album. And it's crazy the fills that he's doing on almost every portion of the song. There's very little rhythm. It's just he's just going crazy. And I didn't know this until about, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 years ago. You know, I've been listening to them since 2003. So maybe about 10 years ago, I realized he's the driving force behind the band. Creatively, the music, the lyrics, you know, he sings on a lot of stuff. And I had no idea when they first came out. I always thought it was their bassist.
It's Bran.
I mean, he's the driving force behind every album, you know, idea. He does, you know, a lot of input on the album artwork, and definitely the lyrics, and especially this last album that came out a couple years ago. Should have been a double album because I think it was 90 minutes. But yeah, it was basically all his ideas, and then they just kind of build around it. And you know, everybody brings their own stuff. But yeah, it's just crazy how some bands you don't necessarily see it because you know other members, maybe the singer is, you know, the face of the band, but then behind the scenes. It's kind of like Metallica. Everybody knows it's, you know, all James and Lars. I mean, they've known that for years. But yeah, so sometimes you just need one or two people in a band to really take it, and the others to just kind of go along with it. Because you get too many too many ideas, too many opinions, and it's really hard for it to work for a lot of people, I think.
I think you're right. When you sent me that video a few weeks ago, again, going back to most stuff that you watch on your phone or the reels or all the stuff, you forget all about it. But I didn't forget this one. This was Bran playing the Last Baron, note for
Yeah.
note, in the studio, and you're just sitting there in awe. Like,
Yeah. How does anybody come up? How does anybody execute that? I can see putting pen to paper and coming up with the notes and the structure, but yeah, how do you actually
mean, the recall of
pull it off?
every single hit.
Yeah. Yeah. Some people just said that.
I always wonder, like, drummers that are in a progressive rock band or progressive metal band or playing jazz fusion or whatever. It just seems like such a tall order to go out and tour this music and play it live, play like a 45 to an hour long set of these songs that just call on all of your faculties and all of your the complexity of these songs to go out and recreate them. I'm like, man, wouldn't you want to just like play an AC/DC versus just like go out there and just jam out and then get back on the bus and pop open a cold one?
I think there's a difference in me shooting hoops in my driveway and playing in the NBA. There's just, if you got that kind of talent, why would you want to just, sit there and play something simple and probably get bored with it?
Yeah.